Today's shir is Masechta Chulin Daf Nun Dalad. We will begin on Daf Nun Gimel Amud Beis on the bottom line. Amra Papi Boy Rabibi Barabaya. Veshit, the halacha, as we've learned, is that if the veshit has puncture, it's nukuvos v'mashu. It's puncture, even the size of a mashu, makes the veshit and the animal treif. Drusasai, similarly, if it was clawed by an animal that we've been discussing in our shiurim, there too the shir is mashahu. Kana, when it comes to the kana, to the trachea, there the amount that it becomes treif is in the kuvasa b'kisser, if it's the size of an isser. Now the question is, drusasa b'kama. How much is the shir of the drusa on a kana that it would make the animal treif? And the way Rashi explains the Gemara is that although the Nekuva is an Isser, and Rashi, as we discussed in the previous year, Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, what is the concern of a Drusa? And Rashi's opinion is that the concern by a Drusa is that the Drusa makes it into a hole. So if that's the case, what's the Gemara Shaila? It's a Dava Poshet, that the shear should be the same shear as a nekuva. If the entire concern of drusa, as Rashi teaches us, is because of potential nekuva. So the way Rashi says, the concern here is that since the kana and the veshit are so near each other, if it's going to be a drusa on the kana, where there maybe the shear should only be an isser, as we're going to learn in the Mishnah further on this Amid Amitz Hashem. But since that may affect the veshit, and we just said that by a veshit, the shear is a mashahu, so too will be the shear by the drusa. That's one way of learning. Other mefarshim actually suggest, or do we say, that the kana and the veshit are separate. And the kana, just like the shear and the kuv is a shear isser, so too is the shear drusa. That's one way of learning the Gemara. Another way of learning the Gemara is perhaps, this machlokes that we've been quoting Rashi and Tosfos, what is the concern by drusa? Is it because of that's going to ultimately be in the kuva? Or is it because the poison spreads? I mean, Tosfos words, it's sirif. That, if that's the case, that's the Gemara, then even by a kana, the shear would be a mashahu, even though the shear in the kuva by the kana is an isser. It says the Gemara, bas the baya had the pashta, echetzev, echetzev, a mashahu. Both by the kana and by the veshet, the shear drus is a mashahu. My tama, why is that the reason? Says the Gemara, zira mikla kali vazel. So according to Tosfos, it's very easy to understand. Because Tosfos say that the Gemara actually is teaching us here that the concern by drus is because of the poison that's sirif, and therefore the shear has nothing to do with the shear in the kuva. Rashi will have to explain that the Gemara is teaching us that we have to be concerned if there's a drus on the kana, it may spread to the veshit, and therefore the shear will be a mashahu by the drus. Says the Gemara, Yosef Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Masa Kameder of Nachman, the Yosef Kama, Drusa Sha'am Ritzricha Bedika, that we discussed in the previous shir, that a Drusa has a Bedika, if it was Nidras, we check if it's red, what area of the body is checked, of the animal is checked, Keneged Bnei Ma'ayim, along the length of the stomach of the animal. Machloikas Rishonim, if that includes the area of the ray of a covet of the lungs and the liver as well. Furthermore, machlokes rishonim, whenever we speak about a drusa requiring bedika, doesn't mean the entire length of the animal. That's one way of understanding the Gemara. Or doesn't mean that where we see there are marks, that's where it has to be checked. But the part that we don't see any marks on, there's no reason to check. Or a third opinion is that if we see the marks, we know that this animal was attacked. So if we see the marks, you check the area where it was attacked. If you don't see the marks, then you have to check the entire length of the abdominal cavity of the animal. Says the Gemara, Amalei Rav Nachman, Halakim, Marim Bei Rav, Rav Paskin, Mikapa Vat Atma. It's not just along the length of the Bnei Ma'ayim, but rather Mikapa Ve'atma has to be inspected. My kappa. So at Atma, the Rishonim explain, means, and we'll speak about that area later in our Shia today, Mitzvah Shem, means the area of the Buka da Atma. But ask the Gemara, my kappa, what does the kappa mean? Ilema, kappa the yoda, the place where the hand begins. So that's the exact same thing. So what's Rav saying that we haven't heard previously? It says the Gemara, Elam kappa de moicha at Atma. And I saw three pshatim in the Rishonim, what does mekappa de moicha at Atma mean? One pshat in the Rishonim means from the area of the simonim. Another pshat I saw in the Rishonim means from the area of the brain stem. And a third pshat is the entire area of the brain. At the end of the shiur yesterday, towards the end of the shiur yesterday, we quoted a machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. If we've been discussing that an animal that's nidras needs bedika, where is the bedika effective? The opinion of Tosfos, we said, was it's effective not only by a suffik, but even by a vadei drusa. Rashi said that it's only effective by a suffik, not by a vadai. That was already discussed at the end of the previous year. So Tosfos uses this Gemara, and he brings together the Gemaras that we learned yesterday so nicely to prove his point. Because Tosfos says the following. Tosfos says, let's think about it. He says, who is the one that's teaching us now that how we do a bedika? The one that the Gemara just quoted, who's teaching us how to do bedika, is Rav. We also learned in the previous year that it is the opinion of Rav that we're not choshish for suffik drusa. So now Tosfos says, makes his point. Obviously, the Gemara here is not speaking about a suffik drusa. Because if we're speaking about a suffik drusa, then Rav wouldn't require bedika at all. What must we be speaking about if Rav is teaching us that you do bedika? It must be by a vada drusa. And Rav is teaching us how to do that bedika. So isn't that a proof that a bedika is effective even by vadei drusa, not only by suffik drusa? So Tosfos uses this Gemara as a raya to his opinion. How will Rashi defend himself? So the Or Sameach says that there are two types of suffik drusas. There's one situation of a suffik drusa, which is really the case that we spoke about yesterday, where we saw an animal that's a dairus come in between other animals. We don't know for sure that anything happened. We just saw that situation. And Rav taught us in the previous year, unlike Shmuel, that that's not necessarily a reason to have a halachic concern. Here we're going to be speaking about a situation, says Dor Sameach, where we saw an animal attacking another animal. We just don't know which animal was attacked. There, Rav can't take a lenient position because we saw something happen. But it's a suffik because we don't know which is the animal that was attacked. There, Rav is not going to say that all the animals that are in the room are treif. He's going to agree that you could do a bedika. That's what the Gemara is referring to. But Rashi will continue saying that if we know for sure that this animal attacked that animal, bedika wouldn't be helpful. Says the Gemara, Kisalk Rav Chiya bar Yosef. Rav Yosef comes to Yisrael. Ashkechinu Rav Yochan Rav Shlokas to Yasev Ka'amri. Drusa Sh'amri Tzricha B'dika K'neg Ba'ayim. You only need to do it along the abdominal cavity. Amalei Elokim, I swear my Barav Mikapa V'atma. As we just explained a moment ago. Amalei Rav Shlokas. Rav Shlokas makes the following statement. Manu Rav V'lo Yidan Alei. I don't know who this Rav is that you feel so obligated to follow his opinion. So, of course, all the Mepharshim ask, he didn't know who Rav was? Rav, the great Amora? So I saw two pshatim in the Mepharshim. One pshat is that, of course, Rish Lakish knew who Rav was. But what's happening here in the Gemara? Rav Yochanan and the other Amoraim are taking a very serious position. And Rav disagrees. He's more machmer. So Rish Lakish says, what makes Rav so much greater than these other Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan, that we should just have to accept what Rav says? It's one pshat I saw the Mefarshim. Another pshat is a very nice pshat. We've discussed this in our shiurim. Actually, Rav's name wasn't Rav. Rav's name was Abba. And Rish Lakish, as the Gemara will show us in a moment, remembered Rav from yeshiva. But when he was still in yeshiva, he wasn't yet the great Rav. He was Abba. He developed into being the great Rav. But he didn't know that that Abba that I went to yeshiva with turned into Rav. So he says, who's this Rav that everybody's speaking about? So he said to him, I'm Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan reminds him, V'loi nehir lei lois the Talmud. Don't you recall that Talmud that sat here? Sheshimus is Rebbe Rabba, that learnt by our Rebbe, Rebbe Agadol, Rav Chia, he learnt. V'lekim, and Rav Yochanan says regarding Rav, Kol ois ha-shonim, Sheshimus ois ha-talmud b'yeshiva. All those years, the Rav learnt in the yeshiva, and nishamashti b'amida. I didn't even get a seat. Oman gavaru, what makes him great? Gavar b'kula. Rashi says he's great, b'toyer v'chassidus. That's what Rashi says. So it's interesting to point out that the Arugas Abaisim, I'm going to speak about how the Arugas Abaisim learns this Gemara more in a moment, makes the point that what he was teaching him was the Rav was the undisputed Gadol Hador. And Rashi's teaching us who is the person that's worthy of being the leader of Klal Yisrael? Somebody who's great but Torah v'chassidus. He's great in Torah, but he has to also be a mensch. Ben Adam l'chaveroi. That's the person who's worthy to be the Gadol Hador. The Mefarshim, of course, also discuss here that the halacha is that Torah is supposed to be studied sitting. We spoke about this previously, especially it's a difficult situation where the Rav is standing and the Rebbe is sitting. Yet we find here, the Rabbi Yochanan says he stood. So Chaim Chinyevsky, I wouldn't say it, Rav Chaim Chinyevsky says there just wasn't enough room for everybody to sit. Others say that the Gemara says in Masechet Megillah that this that we have to sit when we learn is only when the world came weak. There's Yod Chul Shel Olam. Rabbi Yochanan had that strength that he could learn and concentrate properly. But then I saw a very interesting verse from the Arugas Abaisim. He says there are two conditions that ought to be met before somebody learns by a Rebbe. One is that in order to learn by a Rebbe, what you really should do is before you hear the Rebbe shir, you ought to prepare the subject matter. And the second thing, the Gemara says, it's a pasuk, is that you should really face your Rebbe, look at your Rebbe. The pasuk says, V'hayei necha, royes es merecha. So he says, these two conditions really travel together. He says, you're supposed to look at your Rebbe when he's giving a shir. But if you're going to look at a person that knows so much, and you know so little, it's a very embarrassing situation. You can't really look at a person in that type of a situation. So if you prepare beforehand, so of course your Rebbe is greater than you are, but you're not, the disparity is not that great. So he says, Rav was well prepared for the shir. So he was able to sit by the shir. I never really knew the subject matter to the degree that Rav knew it, so I didn't want to face my Rebbe and be embarrassed. So I stood. Anishimashti b'amida. Uman gavahu gavah b'kula. Miyad posuk Rish Lakish v'ama. B'ram zachor ois ish l'toiv. Now you're mentioning this Rav. Of course I remember him. Sh'am rishmu mipiv. He spoke about another halacha that I'm going to mention. Shmuta v'shchuta k'sheira. We spoke about many times that if the kana is out of its spot, then the animal is not kosher. Actually, it's a machloikis. Is it a treifa or is it an avela? So here what happens is, you shechted an animal and you found the kana is not in its place. So you have a real issue. Did it fall out of its place prior to the shechita? And therefore, it's treif. Or did it happen after the shechita, and it's kosher? And as the Rishonim point out, the same concern would be on the veishet as well. But it's more common that the kana should move from its spot than the veishet. So he said, shmuta v'shchuta k'shera. If we shech the animal, then we examine the animal, and we discover that the kana is not in the right place, we could assume that the animal is kosher. Why? She eshla shmuta shetiyasa shchuta. It's impossible that you could have been able to shech the animal when the kana wasn't in the place. So the fact, says Rav, that you were successful in shechting the animal is an indication that the kana was in the right place when you did the shchita. And it's worthwhile to remind ourselves, we learned the Gemara earlier in the Masechta, why not be concerned that the kana moved out of its place after you shechted the kana, but before you shechted the veshit? So Rish Lakish taught us that that isn't the halachic problem. Because once the kana is slaughtered, is cut, doesn't make a difference what happens to it. Rav Yochanan Amar, Rav Yochanan says, Yavi v'yakif. There's a way of doing a test to determine when the kana moved out of its place. And as the machlokes v'shaydim had to understand this test that Rav Yochanan proposes. Some say, is Rav Yochanan, this way Rashi seems to learn, is you have this kana that you cut, and now you have it in the wrong place, and you don't know when did it go into the wrong place. Take this kana that you have in front of you, and cut it now, on another spot. Now it's certainly out of its spot, out of its right place. If you see the two cuts look the same, that's an indication that this was cut also. The cut that you're concerned about was after it was dislodged. If they don't look the same, you know why they don't look the same? Because this cut was there before the kana was dislodged, and this one not. That's how Rashi learns. Other Rishonim disagree, because you're not cutting in the same spot on the kana, because it's already cut there. And that's why other Rishonim suggest you should bring a new animal that is a perfectly healthy animal, that's kana is in the right place, and checked it. And then see how does the kana look. If this kana and that kana look the same, so it's right that that kana was also slaughtered properly. If the two kanas don't look the same, it's because that kana must have been dislodged and this one wasn't. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman, Lo yishana l'shloi tafas b'simonim. This entire, and we'll explain this more in a moment, only works if you weren't holding the kana in your hand. Av tafas b'simonim b'shachet, efe l'shmuta sh'tiyasa shchuta. So first of all, what does it mean that you held the kana in its hand? Most Rishonim mean, as the words of the Gemara imply, that you actually were holding the kana. And if you were actually holding the kana, it's different. What's different, I'll explain in a moment. Other Rishonim say you don't actually have to be holding the kana. If you're holding your hand in the area around the neck, not even necessarily holding the kana itself, it's good enough. So what does this Gemara mean? So Pash Pshat, the way to understand the Gemara, is that the Gemara is saying, the Rav said, the fact that you were able to shecht is a raya that the kana wasn't dislodged when you shecht it. Says the Gemara, that's only if you weren't holding the kana. But if you're holding the kana, then you could shecht even if the kana is dislodged. And Rav Nachman is also speaking to Rav Yochanan, that the test Rav Yochanan proposed is not going to be effective if you were actually holding the kana when you did the shechita. That's how some Rishonim learn. Other Rishonim say that Rav Nachman is not speaking to Rav Yochanan. Rav Nachman is speaking to Rav. Rav stated a fact, that if the kana is dislodged, shechita will never work. Says Rav Nachman, that's not always the case. It depends. If you're holding the kana, then the shechita can work, even if the kana was dislodged, and therefore the fact that there was a shechita doesn't mean anything. Other Rishonim say that Rav Nachman speaking to Rav Yochanan. And Rav Nachman saying to Rav Yochanan, your test won't work if the shechit held the kana when he did the shechita. So, we learned a long time ago, it's 12 blot already, the beginning of our perek, where the perek began on Daf Mem Beis with all of the different treifas. And the Mishnah concluded with the words, Zeh klal, koshen kemoy chaya treifa. And we know whenever the Mishnah ends up with a summary, there's something to be taught from that. So ask the Gemara, what is Zeh klal l'suy mai? Ask the Gemara, the suya shev shmatza, that we learned at the beginning of the sugyas, that there were seven cases that the meroim taught us are also treifa. That's learned from those words of Zeh Klal. Says Gemara, the Yosef Rishba. Yosef was a hunter. And I think I've mentioned this previously here. The Noida Behuda has a shaila, if a Jew is allowed to go hunting for sport. And he says it's not an appropriate behavior. Yosef Rishba, Macha Begida Nashia V'Katla. So where did Rishonim explain the Gemara is he caught the animal, but he wanted to immobilize the animal. So he used to hit it by the Gid Anosha in order that it should not be able to run away. Also, Kamed Rabbi Yehuda ben Mesera, Amalu, and the Gemara wanted to suggest that maybe that would make the animal a treifa. Amal v'chila chaysef treifas yeshlach. Yesh is your intention to add to the list of treifas. Only the list that Chazal gave us is treifa, anything else not. So as the Rishonim explained this Gemara, certainly doing this to an animal will make the animal into musukanis, but won't make it into a treifa. And therefore the halacha is, if you shech the animal before it dies, it's a kosher shechita. Similarly, says the Gemara, Rapapa ba Abba was a rishba, macha ba kulya, would hit it on the kidney. Some Rishonim says only hit, not shoot an arrow. Others say even if shot an arrow, the katle, and ultimately would die. But the question was, if you shechted it before it died, is it a treifa? Also, kameder of Abba, amal v'chila ha'isva treifa sheish, is your intent to add to this list, en l'cha amal shaman chachamim. Ask the Gemara, v'chazina de kamesa. The reality is that if you do this to the animals, they die. So why isn't it a treifa? Answers the Gemara, divader le'sama, they're curable by giving different medicines, chaya. And as we've quoted the Chazanish, when we started the parak, we'll quote it again. The Chazanish says, we aren't to make the assumption, he was a realist. We aren't to make an assumption that all of the cases that we've learned and will be learning are a treifa, are not curable. In modern medicine, many of these issues that we've discussed are curable. And actually, he says some of the issues that the Gemara suggests are not curable, are curable, may not be curable nowadays either. So why doesn't the list change? So the Chazanish takes the following approach. His approach is that whatever Chazal established as a treifa remains a treifa forever. And whatever they said is not a treifa is not a treifa. Because at a certain point, and he has two ways of explaining it, one, which are really connected. One is that there has to be a point where the halacha becomes the halacha. The halacha can't change every day. So at one point Chazal said that this is a treifa. Whatever the Chazal establishes the treif is, whatever isn't, isn't. And he says, what's the reason? Why is it that we see that the lists change, the realities change? He said, because there's a concept in halacha of nishtanu hativim. The world changed, and the environment changed, and people changed, and, you know, what people say is healthy today is not healthy tomorrow. That's all part of nishtanu hativim, but we have to establish that, the halacha has to be established at one point, and the halacha remains the halacha under all circumstances. Says the Mishnah, Elik Sheres Bebehema. So as the Rishonim and all the Mefarshim approach this Mishnah, they approach the Mishnah with an obvious question. Why do we have to have a list of what is kosher by an animal? If it doesn't have one of the treifas that we've been learning, then obviously it's kosher. And actually we're going to see that many of the cases here, we could have easily inferred from what we learned earlier. So the question is, why does the Mishnah have to teach it to us? So we'll try to speak about this as we learn the Mishnah Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach. So the first case is Nikva Gageris. If there's a hole in the Gageris, as we learned on the top of the arm, that doesn't make a treif. Oishinistika, or it has a split. At Kamatechser, how much could it be missing and still be kosher? Until the size of an Isar Talki. So it's very understood why the Mishnah is teaching it to us. Because the Mishnah is teaching us, even though we learned at the beginning of the Perek, that a hole in the Gageris doesn't make a treif, but now Rav Shimon Gamliel is teaching us that is only if it's a certain size. Once the size of an Isar Talki, then it becomes treif. Nifchasa Gilgailus, if the skull was crushed, v'loinikav krum shalmayach, and there's no hole in the membrane around the brain. Why does the Mishnah have to teach us this then? So Mefarshim explain, because the Mishnah is teaching us that even though it's nifchasak al gulgelis, the membrane is what counts, which is what we learned in the first parak, but the Mefarshim explained that the Mishnah is teaching us that even though normally you don't have to check the membrane around the brain, there's no reason to assume that it has a hole. Here, if it's nifchasa gelgelis, then you have to be concerned about the membrane, and the membrane requires bedika. That's one approach I saw. Another approach that I saw was that only if it's not a large break in the skull is the animal not going to be treif, even if as long as the membrane isn't punctured. But if it's a large break, then it doesn't make a difference what the status of the membrane is. Nikav alev, if there's a hole in the heart, but it didn't go to the base chalala all the way to the chambers. So here too, it's a din that we learned in the first Mishnah, because the first Mishnah says, Nikav alev lebeis chalala. So why do we have to say it here? So I saw a number of terutzim. One terutz is that let's say there's a hole that is in the vicinity of the chamber, but not into the chamber. The Mishnah is teaching us that it's still not treif. We would think that maybe it is. Another pshat that I saw is that let's say there's a hole that's mefulish that goes all the way through. The Mishnah is teaching us that it's still kosher. Another pshat, very similar to the pshat that I just mentioned a moment ago, that even though the hole didn't go to the chamber, but normally the heart need not be examined after you do a shechita. Here where you have a heart with a hole, so you have to check what is the status. Nishbra Shedra, if the spine broke, without the spinal cord. Here too, the Rishonim discuss, isn't this something we learned from the first Mishnah? So they say, if we learned the first Mishnah, we would think that either or, the breaking of the spine or breaking of the spinal cord, either or makes the animal a treifa, teaches us the Mishnah that that is not the case. It's the only thing that counts is the spinal cord. But they again say, as we've been saying, the Mishnah does, however, teach us that even though the spine breaking doesn't make the animal treifa, if you have a broken spine, then you need to look at the spinal cord. Nitla covered, we spoke about this din, that if the liver was removed, but in Steinman and Kazayas, we spoke about that the first Mishnah seems to say it's a up to even less, and we answered the question. And if it's machlaikis or it's different places on the liver, that's what the Mishnah is trying to teach us. We know that the hemsis or basicosis are two of the four stomachs of an animal. Shenik v'zula taichzu. And here the chiddush is that even though we learned in the first Mishnah that the stomach having a hole is an issue, so we would think even it has a hole in the area where they lead one to the other, a hole is a hole, teaches us the Mishnah that hole is not a problematic hole, and therefore the animal won't be a treifa. Nitla tchol, if the spleen was removed, nitla akloyos, or if the kidneys were removed, and as the Mefarshim explained, what the Mishnah is teaching us is that even though they were removed, which we would think is worse than punctured, here they're entirely removed, teaches us the Mishnah, the Chiddush, that removal, that even though what our thinking would, we would assume is worse, is really not. Nitla lechi atachten, if the lower jaw was removed. Machlokes rishonim, what is the halacha a nitla lechi ha'elyon, if the upper jaw was removed? Some rishonim say that there it's for short treif. Others say it has the same halacha as nitla lechi atachten. So the Mefarshim say, why is the Mishnah teaching us this halacha? So it was saying that the Elyon is different than the Tachton, so we could understand. The Mishnah is teaching us that specifically the Tachton's removal doesn't make a treif, but the Elyon's removal does make a treif. That's one way of explaining the Mishnah. The other way of understanding the Mishnah is that even though the Mishnah is teaching us Nitl Lecha Etachton is not treif, as we're going to learn in the Gemara Mitzvah Shem tomorrow, Shir, the animal still has to be able to eat food. If it can't eat food, then it is a treif. Nitla emshla, if the womb was removed, v'charusa b'dei shemayim, or if the animal lung was shriveled up b'dei shemayim, because of something that happened b'dei shemayim, what the chiddush here is, dafka, if it was b'dei shemayim, it's not treif. But as we're going to learn in Mitzvah Shem, if it was b'dei, tomorrow shir, it was b'dei adam, then it is treif. Hagluda, if the skin of the animal was peeled off, Remeya Machsher, Vacham Paisrim. Remeya says, this is the way the Mefarshim explained, is that they both agree that the skin could regrow. But the question is, till the skin grows back. So the Chacham say, since there was a time that the animal was left without skin till it grows back. That's why the animal is treif. Ramea says the fact that the skin will ultimately grow back, even though there is a time when it's left without skin, doesn't make the animal treif. So the Gemara is focused that this Mishnah and the first Mishnah begin with seemingly similar wording. The first Mishnah, the Perek, the name of our Perek, is Elu Treifus, that these situations are treif. This Mishnah begins with the words Ve'elu Ksheris. So whenever you have the word Elu, it's a definitive. This is the list. So one of the Mishnahis is, in one of the Mishnahis, the word Elu is definitive, because there are obviously exceptions. So the question is, in which Mishnah is the word Elu definitive? And the other Mishnah only uses that word Elu to be similar to the other Mishnah. So it says the Gemara actually machloikus. Itma, Rabbi Yochanan Elu treifus dafka. The word Elu in our Mishnah is dafka. Mishlokish Omer Elu ksheris dafka. The word Elu in the first Mishnah is dafka. And Mishlokish says the word Elu in our Mishnah is dafka. Says the Gemara, what is the basis of this machloikus? Says the Gemara, Malaika Mifugi, but the Rav Masna. They're arguing over what Rav Masna taught us. The Rav Masna. If the animal, and we'll discuss this, there are three parts to the leg of the animal. The lower part, the middle part, and the upper part. And the upper part, the animal is where the thigh, the leg is in the thigh, and there's a joint. That's the buka da atma. So the Gemara says that if the buka da atma is out of its place, Rav Kahan is treifa. So Rav Masna says that that is a case of treifa. Machloikus, does it have to be completely out of its place, or even if it's partially out of its place, is a treifa? Furthermore, it seems that the Paiskim hold that a buka d'atma means that the ball is out of the joint. It's like a curve on the top, and it's in a joint. But let's say you'll have an animal that one leg is high, longer than the other leg, which would probably cause it to limp. That isn't called a buka d'atma. Rav Yochanan Elu treifus dafka. That the first Mishnah says the words Elu treifus. The word Elu there is very specific. Tana treifus. The Tana taught us which are the cases that treifus. The Tana, and as we said earlier in our shiur today, the end of the Mishnah had the word Zeh klal. The Chazya l'Rav Masna, and based on the Mishnah, adding the words at the end of the first Mishnah of our Perek of Zeh Klal, he assumed the Zeh B'Zeh Klal, that this case that Rav Masna is speaking about, the case of the Buka, the Atma, should be included in teaching us that when the Mishnah says the word Zeh Klal to add other cases, the case of Buka, the Atma, is here to be taught in that case. My Tama, because Rav Masna's thinking is that a situation of buka d'atma, damila natuli, is similar to when something is removed. And the first Mishnah taught us that many situations where the organs are removed, the animal is treif. Similarly, if the leg is out of the joint, it's like a situation that's removed. So, we will make the mistake, says Rabbi Yochanan, that a buka d'atma is treif. Tana. That's why the Tana of the first Mishnah taught us the words Elu treifus, to teach us Hanihu the treifa. Specifically, these cases are treif, Hadra Masna, but the case of Rav Masna is kosher. And as the Rishonim say, and as we said earlier in our shiur today, the Zeh Klal of the Mishnah is to teach us the Shev Shmaitza, and the word Elu treifus is to teach us not to include the case of buka d'atma as a treif. And the word Elu ksheris that is used in the Mishnah that we just learned is only here because to be consistent in wording with the first Mishnah of the Parak. That's how Rabbi Yochanan understands the Mishnais of our Parak. Rav Shimon ben Lakish says just the opposite. Elu ksheris dafka tana. That the word Elu ksheris is very specific. Elu k'sheres dafka tana, treifus, but when it comes, Elu k'sheres dafka, the words Elu k'sheres are specific. Tana treifus, when the Mishnah taught us the word treifus, v'tana zeh klal, v'chazi l'rav kahan d'loyasi b'zeh klal, we can't, says Rish Lakish, because Rish Lakish is saying, of course we should just include the case of Rav Masna and the zeh klal, that we said earlier in our shiur today, includes anything that wasn't specifically mentioned in that Mishnah. Says Rish Lakish, that wouldn't work. My Tama, because he says the case of a Buka de Atma is not comparable, loyal in the Kuvidamya, it's not comparable to a situation where it has a puncture, the loyal of Sukidamya where it's detached, or the Tulidamya where it's removed. Namilidamya. So therefore, how do I know that it's included? Because the word Elu Trefis is not specific. Just Tana, Elu Ksheris, Hani Hud Ksheris, the word Elu in our Mishnah specific, Hadra Masna, the word Elu, even though it's used in the first Mishnah, which would lead us to think that the case of a Buka de Atma is not Treif. Why? Because Rish Lakish is saying that you can't learn Buka de Atma from all the other cases mentioned in that Mishnah, because as he just said a second ago, they're not similar. But if we'll say, says Rish Lakish, that the word Elu Treifus used at the beginning of that Mishnah is Lav Dafka, so that list isn't an exhaustive list, and we'll be able to include this case of a Buka de Atma as a Treifa. So Gemara discusses the Buka de Atma for a moment. Gufa Amrab Masna, Hai Buka de Atma, the Shav Meduchte, if the Buka de Atma was out of its place, it's a Treifa. The Rav Amma, Rav disagrees with Rav Masna, he says it's Kshera. The E Ifsik Nivi, if you look at the Buka de Atma, there are Gidin, sinews, that keep it in place. Says the Gemara, Rava will agree that if those Gidin are cut, then it's indeed Treif. Vilchasa, the halach is, Nifsik Namik Sheri, even if those Gidin are cut, it's Treif. Adam Sakli Sukli, until we see that they're deteriorated, that there's disease. Disease is indeed a simen that this animal is a treifa. Says the Gemara, Ad kama techser. So the Mishnah taught us that how much of a hole does the gargaris, does the kana have that the animal should be a treifa? The size of an iser talki. Says the Gemara, Amaziri, Ad loy mischamin l'chashuri, you. So where Mefarshim explained the Gemara is that the Isser Italki was a Roman coin. And the Romans and the Bavlaim, the Persians, had very bad relationships. And there was no real travel between Rome and Persia. So the Talmidei Chachamim who lived in Bavel weren't able to know what an Isser Italki was. There was absolutely no connection between those two countries. So how were they able to know? And therefore, there was never this coin in Bavel. So Ziri say, Atad loy mischam lam shuri, you who don't know how an Isser Italki looks, shuri bedinei kedinoi, look at the dinei kedinoi, vavik pshita zutrasi, it's like small coins, mishtakna bein pshita zutrasi, that coin you can find upon Badisa. Says the Gemara, Amrav Chana Pesroi, Chana Pesroi said, Eloi me not have a koi bar nachva. Standing above me was bar nachva. Bar nachva is Rabbi Yochanan. Some say because his father was a nachva, was a blacksmith, so he was called bar nachva. Before I should make an interesting observation, the Ben Yoyada says this pshat. Rabbi Yochanan learned our sugya. And our sugya speaks about this siritalki. And Rabbi Yochanan didn't only focus on the lomdus of the Gemara. He wanted to see what the Isser Talki was. So he came to him to see it. And the way Mefarshim explained was that Rabbi Yochanan, and that's why the Gemara uses the words Eloi Minoi, Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Chana was sitting. Rabbi Yochanan came from behind him. Because the halach is that you're supposed to get up, as we'll see for a Talmud Chacham. But that's only if you see him. If he comes from behind you, you don't know he's approaching. So Eloi Minoi have a koi bar nachva. Rabbi Yochanan was standing behind me. He wanted I should supply him with a dinar kadinoi, the shower bay trefa, so he should know the size of this coin, the rochus trefa that we're learning. Obay will make him a kamei. So as soon as I saw him approach, I wanted to get up. But he didn't let me. Amri, for he told me, Shev b'nishev, you must remain sitting, because the halacha is, Ein bali umnis rishoyin lamer b'nei tamid chachamim. Somebody who's walking is not allowed to get up for tamid chachamim, shev b'shoyis k'malachtam. And the machlokes were showing him how to learn this gemara. Rashi says that this gemara is referring to a situation to a paid employee. And if I'm a paid employee, I have to work for my employer and give him 60 minutes of every hour and 60 seconds of every minute. And therefore, the time that it takes for me to get up for this Talmud Chacham is stealing. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan said, you're a paid employee. You have no right to get up for me on your boss's time. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan says, Rabbi Tosfos seems to learn that it's not specifically speaking about a paid employee. It's even referring to a situation where somebody's self-employed. But somebody who's self-employed is supposed to be working. And if he's supposed to be working, he's exempt from getting up. This is machloikis ha-paiskim. Everybody agrees. I'll get to mon times in a moment. But everybody agrees that if you're a paid employee, you have no right to get up. There's a machloikis, if you're self-employed, do you have a right to get up? I'm my own boss. I own my own business. So I have a right to do with my time what I want. So if I have if there's a Talmud Chacham coming, I have a right to get up. That's the approach of some paiskim. Other paiskim say that no, if somebody's going to see me getting up, and they don't know that it's my business, they're going to think that even when you're working for someone, you're allowed to get up. And therefore, even though I, who am self-employed, want to get up, should not get up, not to give anybody the wrong impression. So obviously the Paiskim ask that we know that, I would assume, that in most businesses, Bizman Hazeh, if a Gol Hadar, Rabbi Yochanan, walked in, the employees would all get up. Not just the self-employed individuals, but the employees. And employees, everybody agrees they're not allowed to get up. So how do we understand what happens Bizman Hazeh? So I saw 2 points made by the Achroinim. Darach HaShulchan takes the interesting approach. He says, in those times, people typically sat on the floor. So getting up from sitting on the floor to standing up takes effort and time. But if you're sitting on a chair and somebody walks in, getting up is no big deal. That's why it was different. It's different from Zman Hazeh, from the time of the Gemara. Other Paiskim suggest that in those times, there was different work habits. And indeed, most employers were very, very particular with their employees that they have to work every second of the hour and took it very seriously if they don't. In our world, most employers, not that this chas v'shalom should be abused in any way, aren't that strict with their employees. And if an employee wants to make a phone call, as long as he doesn't abuse it, or he wants to take a drink, or he wants to eat, he's allowed to. No employer will tell him you're not allowed to. Therefore, if they could be lenient in these situations, they would be lenient in this as well. And that's why, even though the Gemara teaches us in Masechta Brachos that an employee who eats shouldn't even say the whole Brachos HaMazon, that a din doesn't apply Bizman Hazeh. And that's why, but going back to those times, Rabbi Yochanan told him, don't get up. You're not allowed to get up. You're working. Ask the Mar Veloy, is that true? Vatnan, kol bali umnis, as people would bring the Bikurim, as they were traveling from their towns to Yerushalayim, to bring the Bikurim, as they went from town to town, all the workers would get up, v'shalom, v'shalomim, and greet them. V'ayma machino anshimar kompleini, people who are coming from this city, v'ayachem, v'shalom. So you see that they did interrupt their work. Amar v'yachem, v'neim oimdim, for them, you're supposed to get up. For Talmid Chacham, you don't get up. Amar B'Yosef, so the Malbim is teaching us that for the people who are doing a mitzvah, and we'll see in a moment, for them, you stop. For somebody else, you don't stop. Amar b'yosi bar Avin, b'amrei kamem chaviva mitzvah b'shata. Look how valuable a mitzvah being done at the right time is. Shreem neim oimdim. For the people who are bringing the bikurim, that are doing a mitzvah, now's the time to do a mitzvah, everybody agrees they're allowed to interrupt their work. Nei tamid chachomim, but a tamid chacham, Rabbi Yochanan walks in, ein oimdim. Says the Gemara, who says that that's the reason? Memai, dilma, kedei shleiteinim, tzimachshin laslovai. As the Mepharshim explained, people are carrying the Bikurim. So they're carrying a few fruits to Yerushalayim. So somebody, as he's traveling with these fruits and schlepping from his home to Yerushalayim, may think that, what is this all about? And if the people in the cities that they travel through don't stop, they'll say, you know what, it is a proof that this isn't such a great mitzvah. So next year, they're not going to do the mitzvah. So in order to avoid that problem, that's why there's a special dispensation. It has nothing to do with chaviva mitzvah b'shatam. However, the Paiskim do say that the halacha is, there is a concept of mitzvah b'shata, that while somebody is doing a mitzvah, you should stop to give respect. And that's why the Paiskim say that if there's a levaya, everybody stops to get up and honor the funeral. And similarly, the Paiskim say that if there's a, that's the reason that if, as a child is being brought to the bris milah, you should get up for the child. So I saw that the Mepharshim asked that a levaya we know is a mitzvah. The mitzvah by a bris is the bris, but not the carrying of the child is not part of the bris. So why do you get up for that? So I saw that the Mepharshim explained that the bris, the mitzvah of the bris, is not just the bris itself. So some say you're getting up in honor of the mitzvah bris milah. Others say, no, that the mitzvah bris milah doesn't mean the bris milah itself. All of the preparations around the bris milah are included in the bris. I saw a very nice verse from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, we know that the minig of the world is that when we say v'yivarech David by Shachris, we get up. Why? Why by that mitzvah do we get up? So he says a very interesting pshat. The minig, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this minig, is that when you say v'yivarech David, that's when you should give money for tzedakah, or at least separate money for tzedakah. Because we say, l'cha Hashem agdula v'agvura, we're saying that all the money we have is really God's, and that's why we're ready to give it away for tzedakah. And that's why in many communities, up to this day, they collect tzedakah by v'yivarech David. So they used to get up in honor of the person who's doing the mitzvah of collecting tzedakah. That's how the minig of getting up for v'yivarech David began.